I'm going to be looking at Acts chapter 13 in a minute. So if you want to be turning there, the book of Acts is the short title for the Acts, the actions of the apostles. And in this book, we learn what they did, how they attempted to carry out the great divine mandate, the commission that is given to the church in Matthew chapter 28. When you read through the book of Acts, you see that it was not always pretty. But in spite of the challenges and in spite of the problems, they made tremendous progress. The epicenter of the gospel started in Jerusalem. Because of the persecution that arose there, the center of God's activity, it seemed, moved from Jerusalem to Antioch. Eventually, there was a powerful movement of the gospel in Alexandria, Egypt, in Rome, eventually in North Africa under the leadership of his name is escaping me right now. But later the gospel reemerged under Martin Luther in Germany, then under John Calvin in Switzerland, later on in England, eventually to the West and to our own United States. And today, while there are many churches and schools in the States, there are tremendous movements for Christ in China, in Korea, and Brazil. The world is our responsibility, but we cannot pull it off by ourselves. And when you look at the history of Christianity, you realize that for the first 1,500 years, Christianity, as it was known, had a rather centralized and organized approach. There was a pretty heavy emphasis, particularly from around the year 500 to the year 1500. There was a very strong, authoritarian, centralized approach. Well, the Reformation began to change all of that. And instead of there being one central governing approach to Christianity, it became left up to each country, particularly more in Europe, each country to decide what it was going to be, whether it was going to be Protestant or whether it was going to be Roman Catholic. Well, the American experiment disrupted even that. The American experience had quite an influence in many ways, and this was one of them. Eventually, in many countries, the idea of having a national, centralized, organized, specific religion gave way to a decentralized, non-governmentally backed approach. The advantage of having a centralized approach is that the churches worked together to accomplish goals without wasting time and resources and people who were doing the same thing. The disadvantage of a strong centralized approach that when false theology creeps into an organization, which it often does, it ended up corrupting the entire organization and the whole thing became a mess. I come from a background of being an independent Baptist, meaning I grew up in and have served in churches that were not officially associated with or tied to other churches. And while the pastors of certain churches may fellowship together, the churches were each independent franchises, so to speak. Now, this arrangement was in part a reaction to the fact that so many denominations, So many organizations, while they may start out true, veer left and go into a liberal direction. And there seemingly has been no way to stop that other than not to be part of it from the beginning. And so the thinking behind what became the independent Baptist movement was, you know what? It's just a whole lot easier never to be part of it from the beginning. That way you don't have to make the tough decision to pull out. Now, I frankly never gave it all that much thought as I grew up. And when I launched into ministry, figured, you know what? It's just a whole lot easier to serve in a church without having to be related to or beholden to some official organization, because it's just a whole lot easier not to have to go to the meetings, to be honest with you. Now, this type of thinking makes it very convenient for people to think, you know what? It really doesn't matter what happens to other churches as long as my church does fine. And if other churches, even if they are other churches of like theology, if they are struggling, well, okay, but just as long as my church doesn't struggle. I graduated from a college that in many cases had a very narrow box that it expected its graduates to stay in. And in several areas, from a practical standpoint, didn't agree with how they defined the box, and I didn't stay in that box. And knowing that I would be isolated from them organizationally. Now, on a personal level, in the many years since I have graduated, I have not really had a group, so to speak, to connect with. Even as a church, we haven't always been real tight with other churches, although we enjoy a lot of good relationships with other churches. Part of that, even here in the immediate area, due to the relationships that we've been able to keep up through, interestingly enough, our softball league. It really ought to go deeper than that, don't you think? But that's practically been how it has taken place. I think it was back around 1998 that I met a couple of pastors who were in a similar situation. They were from the West Side. Fred Froman was one of them. We had a similar theology. We had a similar background. We had a similar philosophy of ministry. But we didn't have an organization or an identity that we could call home. We formed a friendship and ate lunch together about once or maybe twice a year. So it wasn't something that was real deep. But during one of those meetings, I was introduced to a man by the name of Bob Provost. One of the churches was having Bob as a guest speaker. And Bob was this guy who was telling us what was going on in Russia. Now, I knew a little bit about what had taken place, but I'll tell you what, when you listen to Bob Provost for 5 minutes, he makes it very clear, you have got to be there right now and be part of what God is doing. He is that passionate about it. Well, as I began to get to know Bob, I began to realize that our paths had already crossed in a couple of other ways. Bob Provost used to be the administrative pastor of a church in Akron, Ohio, called the Chapel in University Park. I grew up in Canton, Ohio, just down the street from Akron. And the chapel in University Park was a ministry that I had grown to love and respect and had some relationships with that particular church. By the way, our first youth intern, Steve Garcia, is on the staff of that church, the chapel in University Park now. Bob Provost also served on the pastoral staff of Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California, where You may have heard of this guy, John MacArthur, who serves as the senior pastor. From there, Bob Provost became the president of the Slavic Gospel Association. SGA, Slavic Gospel Association, is a ministry that is primarily dedicated to helping the churches in the former Soviet bloc countries. Well, we as a church were a little aware of what was taking place in Russia since the Iron Curtain had been torn down, but Bob Provost was able to provide first-hand accounts. And on July 9th, 2000, Bob Provost came and preached here on a Sunday while I was gone on vacation. And he provided us as a church with first-hand accounts of what was going on. And from that day forward, so many of you became captivated with what God was doing in Russia. And there were several things that we began to learn. We learned that the gospel-preaching churches in Russia had not been completely destroyed during communism. Depending upon the local officials at the time, some of the churches, depending upon what region of Russia they were located in, had more freedoms than others. We learned also that due to several factors, the older male population in Russia was rather small. If you know anything about Stalin and his use of men in World War II, enough is said. Therefore, the churches, due to just how things functioned in terms of whether you were part of the Communist Party or not, and what that would do to your ability to get into schools and have advanced degrees and jobs, so to speak, functionally, when you take all of those into consideration, you find out that the churches had a high percentage of women members. And the women tended to be older. Unless you were a member of the Communist Party, you couldn't get an advanced education. And you couldn't be a member of the Communist Party and be part of the church. And so the churches were often made up of people who were poor, in many cases not exposed to much education, certainly not to many resources at all. So with the fall of communism, that began to change. The churches were seeking to reach out to young people, which they had not been able to do before. And some of the young men who were reached with the gospel had a desire to be involved in the ministry, but there were not too many places that made this practical. There was, and there is today, a huge need for college-level Bible training, for seminary-level training in Russia. Rex and Lori Durham, who we support, are part of a solid school that serves in Far East Russia. Rick and Marilyn Perhai, who will be at our missions conference, are part of a solid theological school in Kiev, Ukraine. There's also a good school in St. Petersburg. But when you consider that Russia is a country that is 11 time zones wide, two seminaries plus one in Ukraine is hardly a blip on the screen. We wouldn't consider Detroit to be the center of theological training for this country. We've got two seminaries here in Detroit, one in Plymouth and one in Allen Park. Another thing that we learned was that the Baptist churches in Russia were fairly well organized and connected. The only major difference within the Baptist churches was a struggle over whether or not they were registered or unregistered. If a church was registered, it officially let the local government know that it was in existence. If it was unregistered, it was not officially an organized church. Those who were unregistered often thought that the churches that registered had compromised themselves. That was an internal struggle that we discovered when we got into Russia. But for the most part, they didn't have different Baptist denominations with competing labels, competing missions programs, competing schools, or competing programs at all. They were just struggling to survive. Nor was there anything such as an independent Baptist church in the sense that they were independent of each other. If you were in a Baptist church, you were part of the Baptist Union. That was just the way that it was. Each region, each state, each oblast had a capital city where traditionally the Central Baptist Church was located, and where often the regional pastor was located as well. Not always, but that was often the case. Each regional pastor was often viewed as the head pastor who organized the other pastors. And these regional pastors would work together on a national level as well. The quality of leadership varies from region to region and from church to church. But in general, the situation is that there are not too many opportunities for the young men of the church, of the churches, to be trained. It was into this gap that many mission agencies from the United States stepped. Some of the mission agencies were not as consistent in their theology, and some of the resources that were used were based upon philosophies that were more man-centered instead of God-centered. But one of the mission agencies that stepped into this gap was the Slavic Gospel Association. You see, in very real terms, here is one of the traditional challenges of getting a church planted, whether it be in Russia or whether it be here in the United States. Let's say, for example, that Roger and Karen decide we want to go into the ministry. And Roger and Karen want to go plant a church. And you go to a mission agency, and the mission agency says, "All right, do you have a seminary degree?" Oh, forgot that one. All right, so you go to a seminary and say, "I want to apply for a seminary degree." And they say, "Do you have an undergraduate degree?" Oh, forgot that too. Before you can even apply to many mission agencies as a church planter, you need a 4-year degree, undergraduate. Now, some of you know, because of what you are spending on your kids' education, send your kid to Baptist Bible College in Clark Summit, it's about $20,000 a year. Cedarville University, about $20,000 a year. So you're looking for a 4-year degree now, undergraduate, about $80,000. All right? Some of you, your hand is over your mouth. Your jaw is open. I know. Take the paddles out, put them on high therapy, and hit the button. Get it going again. That's just the undergraduate. Now think of this. You spend another 3 years in seminary, and that is going full time. I took a 10-year approach on seminary. You add another 3 years, and basically, I mean, we'll be conservative here. You're looking at another $50,000. And we're not talking, okay, you add some living expenses in there as well. So now you're into this thing 7 years. Now you're ready to apply to the mission agency. And if you get accepted by the mission agency, then you need to now start raising your support. Now, you can get some more specifics about this whole process from Keith and Marilyn, because they are very involved in all of this. But raising support basically is a 2 to 5 year process. So let's just take 3 years in which you're able to raise the support that is needed. You add that to the 7 years of education that's already gone on. And now, Roger and Karen, it's 10 years from when you decided to start to the when you're able to get onto the field, and you haven't had language school. You get onto the field, and if you're going to a field in which it's non-English speaking, you've got 2 years of language school ahead of you before you are conversant with that culture. And so basically, 12 years, and the way I figured it up, Keith, about $350,000, $370,000. Is that? Okay, he's nodding his head. Now you're ready to start to plant a church. And you've got $370,000. Now, where does that money come from? I mean, functionally speaking, that's some of what we are putting into missions to help that process get going. What happens if a family in that setting, even internally, crashes and burns? That is part of why we have Keith and Marilyn in this position here, because we have, there is so much that is put into our missionaries. We want to see them thrive and grow. Well, when the curtain fell down, when the doors were opened to Russia and the national leadership was looking at the fact that they did not have the ability to train their potential leaders, they said to the United States, they said to Bob Provost and the Slavic Gospel Association, come train our men. If we follow the traditional way, then we would say, fine, we'll get there in 12 years. But that's not good enough. So it was in that setting that the idea of a strategic Bible Institute was formed. The Strategic Bible Institutes, we call them SBIs. They work like this. The pastors in a region, a state. Take, for example, the state of Kirov. It is the size of the nation of France. But the pastors in that region, the Baptist pastors, identified the young men of their church who had the potential to be pastors. And they sent those men there in their region of Kirov to one of the churches where they would live from September through June. And during that school year, they would be trained by pastors and teachers from the United States. The teachers from the States may or may not be pastors, may or may not know each other, may or may not have a consistent philosophy of ministry or an agreed upon theological system. The Slavic Gospel Association really tried to make sure that they did. But this approach, to be quite honest with you, has been very helpful in jump-starting the theological education so desperately needed in Russia. I don't know if we have this particular slide, but about how much we've invested in the SBIs. This is just from Cornerstone in 02. You can see the numbers. 03 was a big year for us. We have invested about $67,000 into these Strategic Bible Institutes. We have done this in partnership with a number of other churches here in the Detroit area. Each Strategic Bible Institute cost about $70,000 per year. And from those strategic Bible institutes, about 15 to 20 men would be trained and be ready to plant churches. You can begin to see how this whole system makes a lot of sense, because 15 to 20 men ready to plant a church in 1 year from $70,000 versus one guy, 12 years, $370,000. You see that. And already these men who are being trained are in that culture. They know it. They live there. They're already rooted there. So it makes an awful lot of sense. But the Strategic Bible Institute, as good as it was to get things jump-started, is not a long-term solution. Because even though in that year of training, we provided a lot of good teaching, the teaching was all done within a classroom setting. And the classroom is not real life. And a lot of times, these young men who would sit under our instruction and would benefit from it would go back to their home churches, where in some cases the pastors were more self-taught. And at times they wouldn't embrace some of the things that these young men were learning, would not allow them to carry some of those things out, and it would become a frustrating situation. The Strategic Bible Institutes demand a high level of travel and time that I'm not sure is practically sustainable. We have been partnering with these things for a number of years, and the outcome has been good. But I tell you what, every 2 weeks, sending another team over, that's very demanding, even for a partnership of churches. The Strategic Bible Institutes demanded a high level of financial commitment that, as I explained, on the one hand was very cost effective. On the other hand, it had the unintended result of creating a dependent relationship. For example, let's say that Terry, that you were a member of a church in Russia, and you wanted further training for ministry. But there was no way you could just pack everything up and go to Kiev or St. Petersburg or clear out to Khabarovsk, Far East Russia. So you found out your pastor told you about one of these Strategic Bible Institutes, and you said, man, I really want to do that, but I'm married. How can I go to school and support my wife all at the same time? So part of the design of the Strategic Bible Institute, and part of what we did is we would pay we called it a stipend. We would pay you to go to school. It made it possible for these young men to be able to provide for the needs of their home, pay for their food and transportation. Nobody got rich off of it, that was for sure. But it was enabled them to be able to take a year off of work, still support themselves, and get the training that was needed. That was a good solution. However, the result of that is you have the teachers coming in from America. They bring with them this money, and that relationship over a period of time can become an awkward situation, because the people who are on the receiving end do not want to offend the people who are giving, and that can produce some awkwardness and not always honest communication going back and forth. And it becomes then a situation where if you have had somebody, let's say you have an uncle who is very wealthy, and every Christmas he gives you a check for $5,000. And ever since you can remember, he's given you a check for $5,000. And then when it's Christmas, he doesn't do it. What do you say? Hey, wait a minute, you know. No, that's... You become used to that. You get used to that and you start to expect that. And one thing within ministry relationships, when somebody is consistently giving, that can become an easy situation to just expect that to take place. And you never have to stand on your own two feet. This, one of the things that we've found out is that the pastors in Russia are not supported financially by the congregations. In all of the conversations that I've had about this topic and with others, we have found, and there may be more, but we've only found that there are three pastors. We only know of three pastors in the whole country whose churches support their pastors. How are they supported? From the states. Now, on the one hand, you can see that there are some churches that are so poor, there is no way they'd ever have a pastor unless we who have been blessed with so much didn't share, and we should. But that can also be a situation where the church doesn't grow. It doesn't take upon that responsibility for itself. And can you understand then what happens in a dynamic within the church? If my salary was paid by somebody else, not by you, am I accountable to you? I do anything I want. Now, that's not their spirit, mind you. But you understand, that's not a healthy situation long term. Which is why we saw the Strategic Bible Institutes as something that is a good first step, but it's not the whole enchilada. I'm mixing cultures there. I shouldn't do that. All right. The SBIs did not provide much opportunity for follow-up in a field setting. And the Strategic Bible Institutes had very little contact with the actual pastors. But it was training the potential pastors, many of whom, as I said, would serve with the current pastors. And in some cases, the traditions and practices would negate some of the training that these men received. So, while the Strategic Bible Institutes were effective in getting some training going and in some cases helping to get some of these men prepared to start churches, and we're able to see today churches that have been planted as a result of the training that we helped to provide. That is exciting. But it was becoming more and more clear that there was another way, another step that was needed to address the situation and to help out the church in Russia. Now keep in mind several dynamics that are at work. Number one, we believe and we embrace the local autonomy and authority of each church. And so when we go to, say, the Grace Church in Kirovo-Shepetsk, we don't go in as being in charge. We're not. We are servants to that church. We place ourselves under the authority of Pastor Alexander in that church and Pastor Anatoly in his church in Kirov. But we also know that it often happens, folks, that he who holds the money holds the influence. And there is so much money flowing into Russian ministries in different ways, usually with strings attached. We also know that there are competing national and personal views. And there is, on the part of some, a level of distrust, some of which is fostered by the pastors who view the Americans as being liberal and soft. For example, the general view of some of the Christians in Russia is that the churches and the Christians in America are weak. And the reason that we are weak, one is because we are so affluent, but the second one is because, particularly in the Baptist churches, we believe in eternal security. And the view is that because you believe that once saved, always saved, then that is why the American Christians are so worldly. Because they believe that once they're saved, they can live any way they want. And the Russians typically do not believe that. They believe that if you get saved and you can lose your salvation, so brother, you better work hard at maintaining that. And they hold that theology over the heads of their people to make sure that they keep coming to church and they keep doing the things that they ought to do. Now, you can see that when you are separated by such a wide cultural gap, that can you find examples in America where that theology of once saved, always saved has been used as an excuse for sinful living? Sure. And you can hold that up in a church in Russia and say, see where that gets you? So how do you explain true theology without just playing right into their fears that you're trying to take an American version of Christianity and stuff it down their throats? That's part of the tension that has existed at times. In some cases, like in Oryel, in Kirovo-Shepetsk, we had some very good schools that had some good long-term results in that region. In other cases, particularly in Krasnodar, the results of the school were mixed because the leadership in that region was divided. In some cases, the pastors would send the students to the school because it would give them some training, it would give them some money, but on the weekends, the pastors would try to make sure that the students were not embracing everything that we taught them, which that is what set the stage in the class for arguments that at times were more about national pride, the Americans versus the Russians, than it was about theology. Of course, being from Detroit, I would just simply say, if it was so great, why does half of our Red Wing team no longer live in your country? But that was... No, I wouldn't bring that up. Well, meanwhile, back at the ranch here, we, as Cornerstone, were working with several churches in the Detroit area in an effort to staff these schools, which gave us an opportunity to work very closely with these churches to develop some much stronger relationships together, to seek to address problems that we were encountering with this project in Russia. And also the fact that our churches were doing this in a concentrated way gave us a unified voice when speaking with the leadership at the Slavic Gospel Association. And so we didn't even know what to call ourselves here in Detroit, these churches that were working together. We just ended up calling ourselves the Russian Coalition, but we were a whole lot more than just about working together in Russia. Slavic Gospel Association began, along with the national leadership of Russia, to develop a different approach, a step above the SBIs, to help address the problems in Russia. And one of the pastors from our coalition, Terry McIntosh, by the way, was part of those strategy sessions with the Slavic Gospel Association. And the result of that was called the Antioch Initiative. In Acts chapter 13, we read that in the church at Antioch, there were prophets and teachers, Barnabas, Simeon, called Niger, Lucius of Cyrene, Manaen, who had been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch, and Saul. While they were worshiping the Lord and fasting, the Holy Spirit said, "Set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work to which I have called them." So after they had fasted and prayed, they placed their hands on them and sent them off. It is based upon this pattern of the church in Antioch that the term Antioch Initiative has been founded. The goal of the Antioch Initiative is to help develop within each region of Russia a local church that is theologically, philosophically, and functionally so sound and healthy that it becomes a self-supporting, training and sending base for its region. This church, as the location, and the pastors in that region will eventually take over the practical charge of recruiting, which they already do, training, which is something that we are doing right now, sending, which is something that they do, and supporting, which is something that we do. All of the men and the ministries of their region. The Antioch Initiative is a 5 to 7 year plan that focuses upon not the potential pastors, but focuses upon the current pastors in that region. It trains and equips the pastors of that region so that they are able to take their own region and train their own men and bring their whole area up to the next level. It differs from the Strategic Bible Institute in several ways. The Antioch Initiative training focuses upon the current pastors in a region, not the potential ones. The Antioch Initiative classes only meet 3 times a year, in some cases 4 times a year, instead of going from school, as the SBI did, from September through June. The classes in the Antioch Initiative, because they are focused upon current pastors who are currently pastoring their churches, who can't give up a year of life, it only meets. And the one that we're doing only meets 3 times a year. The pastors are not paid a stipend for this. And the work that they do, their homework, is done in their local churches. For example, one of the weaknesses within the Russian church is their preaching. When they preach, they often string a number of stories together, find a Bible verse somewhere to support it, but in terms of helping their own people to think logically and systematically and theologically, they don't do it because they don't think that way. They haven't been trained that way. And so, for example, if I go and train these pastors in one of the areas of preaching, I would train them on how to preach through the book of, what would you guess? Romans, absolutely. And what would they have to do then? They would have to, in the next 6 months, they would have to preach through the book of Romans in their church, or at least get through the first half of the first chapter, if I've taught them well, huh? They would have to develop a preaching plan and know what they were going to do. And you can begin to see the impact that that can start to have in helping their people understand how the Bible all fits together. There's a flow to this. The Antioch Initiative not only focuses upon the pastors of that region, but are we able to, I think we have another slide, able to go into the, there's Moscow and there's Kirov. That's the kind of the region there. And that's the Kirov region. And also, just to the south and to the west is this little region called Mariel. I think there's a little line that goes underneath that. There we are. That region right there is also, as far as the Baptist Union is concerned, the pastors work with those in Kirov. Kirovo-Shepetsk is where the Grace Church is. It's the strongest church of that whole region. And that region, by the way, is the size of the nation of France. And so the pastors from that region have all agreed to be part of this Antioch initiative. Three times a year, they will travel to Kirovo-Shepetsk. And during that teaching time, there will be a team, a couple guys that will go from our Detroit coalition who will go to train those about 60 to 80 pastors. We've already had some initial contact with it because they do have a pretty good organization, and they've asked Jerry to come over on a couple different occasions when he's been in Russia, and he's had some initial teaching times with them. Plus, because of us being in Kirovo-Shepetsk on two different occasions and developing a very good relationship with not only Pastor Alexander in Kirovo-Shepetsk, but Pastor Anatoly, who is the regional pastor whom you got to meet, who is in Kirov, there is a very, very trusting relationship that we have with that region and those pastors. It is a beautiful relationship that is something that we haven't enjoyed with some of the other regions as well. So what we're trying to do is not only focus upon the pastors of this region, but in addition to training those pastors, we want to train the leadership of the church, the Grace Church in Kirovo-Shepetsk, so that that church is a vibrant, healthy, self-supporting church that becomes the central location that trains and equips and helps support the leadership of the rest of the churches as well. Frankly, I think that the strategic Bible institutes that we as a Detroit coalition have participated in have earned us a lot of trust and respect from the leadership in Russia. And I believe that in many ways, while they have been very, very good, and if I had to do it all over again, I would do them again. But I think that they have all just prepared us for something that is even better. The number of trips that we are planning on taking as a coalition will be greatly reduced. Instead of going from 12 to 15 times per year as a coalition, we'll go 3 times a year. The cost of this will be greatly reduced to the churches and to the coalition, but I believe the opportunity for long-term change and involvement will be greatly increased. Since we are committed to the leadership of the churches of one region for 5 to 7 years in this manner, the opportunity for trust and loyalty and mutual learning is greatly increased, which is why we were... Was that a light bulb? Okay. Everyone safe? Okay. I'll start that sentence over because nobody remembered a thing that I had to say. It's because of the relationship that we enjoy with, like, Pastor Alexander. We were able to find out about how sick this man really was. And he was suffering from some digestive problems within his stomach that, frankly, they just weren't able to treat real well in Russia. And this man was a very, very sick man. We didn't know what he had. We were afraid that his life was in jeopardy. Knowing that he is such a key person, we were initially very, very concerned. One of the benefits of bringing Alexander and Anatoly and Dennis over here is that not only were we able to sit down with them and say, as a coalition, all right, in 5 to 7 years, here is what we want your church to look like. Here is what we believe from the Scriptures a healthy church is. Do you guys agree? And are you willing to sign on? Because it will involve making some changes in your church. And we had to have that agreement before we could proceed with this. It also gave those men an opportunity to see that the way we do it here at Cornerstone looks a little different than the way they do it at Lakes Baptist and Walled Lake, or a little bit different than the way they do it at First Baptist in Farmington, or Berean Baptist in Livonia. But we embrace it. It just there's just a little bit of difference with personalities. So that's fine. Everything doesn't have to be exactly the same. Not only were they able to see that, but just from a practical standpoint, we're able to hook Alexander up with one of the doctors in our church. Alexander has been eating, we would call it cream of wheat. He has been eating cream of wheat for basically 18 months. Morning and evening, that's all that his stomach could handle. And he wasn't really getting, he was getting a little bit better. We were able to connect him with one of the doctors in our church who was able to change the regimen of antibiotics with him. And I think in about 2.5 weeks' time, Alexander's now eating steak. That's going to, you know, help just maintain the guy's life. Those kinds of relationships and are not possible, really, on a when you're just blowing by each other in the night. Now, a team of men from our coalition of churches here in Detroit will go 3 times a year to Kirovo-Chepetsk to train the pastors from the Kirovo-Muriel region. We will follow an agreed-upon curriculum, and the pastors will be required to do the homework in their churches that will help reinforce what they learn in the classes. Pastor Fred and Mel Stahl are the first team that are going. They leave on the Thursday of our Nine Marks Conference. We are hopeful that in these next 5 years of training, that in addition to teaching these pastors, that our churches in the Detroit Coalition who are part of this can increase our own personal scope of involvement in those churches. For example, these churches in Russia have no membership lists. Why would you, when the communist government would come in and take the list? You see why. But without being able to identify their membership, they don't have a very good manner of shepherding their people. They have no constitutions, doctrinal statements, financial policies, membership requirements. They want those things. They need help in learning how to develop a ministry plan, goals, objectives, and strategies, and developing a biblical philosophy of ministry. But beyond that, we know that there are practical needs on the congregational level. People need to learn how to be self-starters and operate small businesses. We would like to connect some of the men and women in our church who understand small businesses and connect with them with people there who can teach them how to do that. Because in the communistic system in which so many of them were raised, you didn't do anything. You didn't initiate anything. It was all done for you. And so they just don't think the way we do in many ways. And now they're forced to do that. They need help in reaching their community with their orphanage ministries and their camping ministries. There are some things that as time goes on, we can match our strengths with their needs, but not in a dependent way, but in a cooperative way. Meanwhile, our churches here in the Detroit area who've been working on this have developed a very close-knit respect and mutual appreciation for each other. And our relationships have gone far beyond working on a mutual project in Russia. There is a genuine camaraderie here from the pastors and the people, and that has been seen in a tangible way. I got an email from a guy in our church this week after the sermon that I preached last Sunday morning. He said, "You know, I've been convicted." He said, "I love Cornerstone, but he drives here 45 minutes one way every Sunday morning." And he said, "I know I can't be involved like I should be." He said, "I need to be involved in a local church that's local to my community." And I wrote him back and I said, "I hate telling you this, but I need to tell you this. You're absolutely right. And there's a church right around the corner from you that I know the pastor and I know the people and I know the leadership of that church because of the level of involvement that we have had in this coalition. And I say they are absolutely rock solid. You will love them and you will thrive there. And I did not see him here this morning. I think he has already went. Did we lose that guy? No. No. Because the church is bigger than Cornerstone. We were also able to help the leadership of some of the churches at times when the people in the churches go through difficult times. We've been able to be of help with some of the churches through mutual counseling situations. And be quite honest with you, the unity and the focus of the leadership of our churches of the Detroit Coalition has been such an encouragement to the leadership of the Slavic Gospel Association, who have continually pointed to the Detroit churches and as an example to the other churches in the country. And what we have done as pastors is we have worked very closely together to anticipate the problems, to document our goals, to define very clearly where we want that central church to be like, to be at when we are done. And as I mentioned, the first trip of this new ministry is coming soon. It actually starts in Russia on November 1st. And so what we are doing to celebrate the launching of this Antioch initiative is we are going to have a combined service for all of the churches involved. And that combined celebration is going to take place here at Cornerstone on Sunday night, October the 9th. And that is the closing night of our missions conference. We have invited all of the people from all of these churches to come here for this event. Bob Provost and some of the leadership of the Slavic Gospel Association are coming in as well. In fact, Bob is going to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma that morning, and the church there in Tulsa is moving their morning service up so that he can catch a flight in time to be with us that evening. Now, what that means is that everybody in our church, every one of us, that night, we have to be an ambassador for this church to every person who attends here from another church. This is going to be our dress rehearsal on October 9th for our Nine Marks conference that we are hosting at the end of October. Because these same churches that are coming for this event are in many cases planning on coming for the Nine Marks Conference as well. And although we didn't sit down and plan this initially, the dovetailing of these two events is absolutely divine. These churches that are part of this coalition are seeking to get as many of the people in their own leadership as from their churches to be part of the Nine Marks Conference, so that as many people in their own churches as possible have a concentrated training time that helps them understand from the Scriptures what is a healthy church. And a healthy church of what we are seeking to build here is what we are seeking to develop in Russia and well. In fact, the Nine Marks of a healthy church is a practical model that we are using in Russia. When I look back over the last 16 years, I have learned that I am not an independent Christian who pastors as a lone ranger, an independent, completely self-driven, self-sufficient Baptist church. I am finding out that I am a dependent, mutually committed follower of Jesus Christ who serves on a team of elders of a local Baptist church. And we, together with the rest of our church, are learning how much we need each other and how we are not in competition with the real body of Christ, but we serve to complement each other, strengthen each other, rejoice with each other, and help you and help each other. I am more excited now, almost 16 years into this, I am more excited now about this ministry than I have ever been. And tonight, I just want to encourage you. I want to thank you for your trust. Thank you for your commitment, your loyalty to this ministry. If we were in a continual state of conflict here, we could never participate in some of these things or be in a position to be a blessing to other churches, even through the Nine Marks Conference. But your joy, your enthusiasm, your consistency, they are all the support system for much of this. The way you live your life, the way you love Christ, the way you love each other, it matters and it shows. And I knew that you needed to know and would want to know what this aspect of the ministry is about. These are challenging days for the church. Who knows what's going to happen to our economy and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? I think these are absolutely fantastic days for us as well. And by God's grace, who has been faithful to see us this far, He's not going to drop us at the curb from this point on. We go on with joy. These are neat things that are on the plate for us. We want to arise to these occasions and take full advantage of them. To God be the glory. Will you stand with me? Father, we thank You. Thank You for Your grace to us. Thank You for allowing us to hear from Cassie and Jenny tonight. Father, that was so exciting to hear two of our girls who've been raised in this country, surrounded by all of our junk, say they love to give to people who are broken and needy and weak. Because when we give like that, we are acting like You. Because that's what You did for us. Father, thank You for allowing us to partner with and learn how, even as a church, to do life with other churches. Thank You for another exciting door that You have placed before us. We want, by Your grace, to step through that confidently and joyfully. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.